Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Paranexus Universe. This is your host, Chuck Kelly, here with my good friend and co-host, Grant Rubendonk.
Hey, everybody. Welcome and happy Thursday evening.
Good to have everybody with us tonight on this Thursday, September 3rd, 2009. Well, the year is really going by, isn't it? Flying by. And good things happening. We have a new staff member on board, Dave Desjardins. He's listening, so he's probably going to give me crap on that. But we're glad to have Dave on board as our newsletter editor, and we sent out the first newsletter under his oversight today. So if you've got any comments or feedback or positive things that we can do with it, we'd sure love to know about it. Just go to paranexus.org and let us know there. Also, we have launched a new contest, something new for Paranexus.
This one's going to be fun.
Yeah, it's going to be fun, and it's going to be an educational experience. It's a fake a photo contest, and anybody can join. You don't have to be a Paranexus member to enter this contest, but anybody can do it, and it's, you know, fake a photo. It can be any kind of anything related to anomalous phenomena. It can be, you know, aliens, ghosts, spirits, Bigfoot, Walkman, whatever, you know, whatever is around that. But take a look at paranexus.org. You'll see the little graphic there for it, and you can learn all about it. This contest has already started today, so it's open, and it's going to run through October 22nd. That's roughly a week before Halloween. And then we're going to announce the winner. There's going to be actually three prizes on this one. There's going to be a first and second place prize, and then there's going to be a popular vote prize, which means that everybody will have an opportunity to judge the popular vote. So as the entries start coming in, we'll be putting those in the Paranexus gallery under its own folder there, and you can go take a look at them, and you can vote for which photo you like the best as they start coming in, and then we'll tally that all up. But there's some prizes. First place winner will get a year membership at Paranexus. That's worth $39, as well as their choice of either the CPI course or the CLPI course, the leadership course. And that's worth up to $65. And then the second place winner will get 6-month membership at Paranexus. And, of course, they'll get certificates and all that stuff. And the same is true with the popular vote winner. They'll get a 6-month membership to Paranexus. But what we're going to do is kind of cool because we're going to bring the first and second place winners on the show on October 29th and give them a few minutes and let them explain how they put together and their faked photographs. So take a look.
Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun, no doubt about it. And, you know, it's also going to be a learning experience for folks because, you know, we're going to show them, you know, how we, you know, determine things, how we go about looking at stuff. So it's going to not only will it be fun, but it'll be a real learning experience. So
yeah, and
look forward to it.
Yeah, and people will be, you know, our members and whoever looks at them, you know, we'll be able to get a good idea on how to spot faked photographs and hoaxes and how they're done. So it should be a good educational experience. There's no charge to enter. So go take a look at paranexus.org for more details. That having been said, we're happy to have psychic lawyer Mark Anthony back with us tonight. Hey, Mark, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. And, you know, I think that contest is one of the coolest I've heard in a long time. because normally it's like, bring us pictures of ghosts and spirits, and so everyone's like, oh, wow, this is wonderful. But what you guys are doing is challenging people to be creative, and it's a learning experience, which is what you guys are all about, is education and learning about how people can fake or fabricate evidence. I think that's awesome, because, I mean, people show me pictures all the time of they'll say, oh, see this picture and there's orbs here. Are those angels? And I'm looking at the picture going, no, it looks like refraction on the camera lens to me. I think that spectral phenomenon can in some instances be recorded, but, you know, everybody's looking, you know, looking for these things, and they want it to happen so much that they're going to take a suspended belief, I think. To do that. So I think what you guys are doing is puts a real twist on the whole thing. I think that's a lot of fun.
It should be.
And, you know, the thing of it is with computer-generated graphics now, it's one of those things where, you know, you got to be really, really careful. And, you know, and hopefully we're going to be able to, you know, show folks some of the techniques we use to get to the bottom of photographs that look too good to be true, because most of the time that's the case.
Well, you guys are a bit different than a lot of the shows that I'm on because, well, for a lot of reasons. No, but because...
We went off our meds.
Well, you're open-minded skeptics because, you know, there are people that will believe anything, okay? And they're like, oh, you know, I saw an angel in my toothpaste this morning, or, you know, whatever. And then there's people that won't believe anything at all. That are so incredibly closed-minded. Because I know when I was last on the show, Grant in particular was like, yeah, I don't know about this guy. And, yeah. And so, you know, start doing some readings and stuff. And, you know, they're, you know, what a lot of people think is, well, if I can't see it or understand it, it doesn't exist. But, I mean, the world as we know it exists beyond our five physical senses. I mean, people didn't know what made folks sick. They thought it was evil vapors at night or negative energy or whatever. And then after the invention of the microscope, they start seeing that, gee, you know, this water has these organisms in it and so on and so forth. And the telescope could show us what these, you know, little points of light in the sky really were. So when we start going beyond our five physical senses, we start seeing that there are so many things that we can't perceive without an additional frequency or an additional ability to perceive that. So, anyway, I don't mean to launch off on a tangent, but
that's fine.
Well, you know, it's good working with open-minded and healthy skepticism, because you know, in the line of work that I'm in as a medium, I come across, I don't know how else to say it, a lot of kooks. They are essentially charlatans that say they have psychic ability and all this, and I look at what they're doing, and they don't have ability. I mean, I was at this conference, and there was a psychic who had written a book that, and this person indicated that 20-something dead people came and gave her these stories, and she wrote about them and had their names and all this stuff, and she was being questioned by some media people, and they said, well, how can you verify that? She goes, well, the dead people told me. She says, yeah, but have you talked to their families? Oh, I don't know any of their families. They just told me. And it's like she looked like a complete joke. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you can just get up there, I mean, I could say, oh, yeah, I was talking to Abraham Lincoln this morning, and like what he said, that's nonsense, unless you can verify it.
You were too?
Yeah.
We had breakfast this morning.
But, you know, people have asked me, have you talked to Michael Jackson yet? And it's like, no, because none of his family members have come to me. I don't have a personal connection with Michael Jackson. And there would be no reason why his spiritual entity would come to me. But if one of his family members wanted me to make a connection and his spirit wanted to adjust its frequency to where I could perceive that spirit, well, then I would say yes. But as far as, you know, just conjuring up or summoning Michael Jackson, that's not how this works. So, anyway, back
Mike,
to you.
Mike, do you think that, spirits go through a transition when they cross over? I mean, we all know the theory about, you know, the people that are conflicted, you know, or full of fear, you know, or the light, you know, don't cross over. But is there like a transition phase, just a natural phase, transitioning from the body to the spirit, where,
there,
you know,
there,
that...
That's a great question, Grant, and there's so many different schools of thought on that. I'm of the school that a spirit, once it crosses over and crosses into the light, okay, the light is the letting go of all the negativity and letting go to the attachment of this world and evolving to the next frequency, that they're able to communicate right away. And
mm-hmm.
I know this because I have received, for example, my uncle died, and all of a sudden I see him standing in my living room, and except he looked like he was 25 years old, and he was trying to communicate with me. And then the phone rings. It's my brother saying, "Hey, you know, Uncle, you know, I won't say his name, but he died a couple hours ago this morning." Okay, so he came right to me. He was not only my uncle; he was my godfather, and we you know, we had a good connection. I've also been at the scene of a murder in my capacity as a lawyer, and when I got there, it shocked the daylights out of me because I could see the spirit of the victim running around and running around. And
oh wow, that must have been traumatic for you.
It was a trip. I was at it's a good story, and I'll try to make it quick. But I was at my office. I came in from court, and one of my assistants, she's crying. I go, "What's going on?" She goes, "My husband just witnessed a murder, and he was working at this house in a ritzy neighborhood. And he said some guy came running up the driveway of the house next door with another man chasing him. He thought they were playing paintball. And then all of a sudden he realizes, oh, my God, that guy emptied a clip. Like, you know, boom, 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 boom. You know, it shot this guy like, you know, five or six times at point-blank range. So I said, let's go, because it was a real high-class neighborhood. There were possible allegations that it could have been a drug deal, whatever. So I'm thinking, hey, this could be a contract hit. And before his name's all over the newspaper, let's get up there. And you know. So we get there, and I get out of my car, and all of a sudden I start shaking and sweating, and I felt searing waves of terror. And my assistant looks at me. She goes, "Oh, you're doing that weird thing that you do, aren't you?" And I could see this young, he looked Hispanic, like a young Hispanic guy, about 5'6", 5'7", running. And he was running around, and he was just panic-stricken. And then he ran right up to me, because they can tell who can perceive them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, you know, "You've got to let go. You know, you've got to go into the light." And he had this look of terror in his eyes. It was really intense. It was very, very intense. And I'm sitting there going, "God, what do I do? What do I do?" And I go, "Okay, I've read about this." So I go, "God, send Archangel Michael and St. Francis and Gandhi and Krishna and Buddha and everybody good that's ever existed to help this guy go into the light." You know? And all of a sudden his image faded and the feelings of terror subsided. Now, as far as I am concerned, I believe that he transitioned into the light. Now, what made it interesting was, of course, I never saw the body because by the time we got there, it had been secured. So I'm all soaking wet with sweat, you know, because it was very, very draining. And I walk up to my secretary's husband, who was the eyewitness, and the cops are there questioning him. And I said, "Was the victim about 5'7", Hispanic male, wearing khaki camouflage colored clothes and clean shaven and all this?" All of a sudden, they look at me and they say, "Well, how do you know what the victim looked like?" You know, like all of a sudden the investigation is out.
Yes,
it's on me, and I'm like, "Oh my God!" And my assistant, she goes, "My husband told us on the phone what he looked like." You know, and I look over at her, she's winking at me, and I'm like, and the cops are like, "Oh, okay."
Yeah.
Well, what was really interesting was about a month later, I saw a newspaper. I was out having lunch, and I look at the newspaper, and there's these pictures of three guys on the headline, you know, in the front page, and I'm looking at one of them, and it was about some type of drug bust or something. And I go, "God, it must be one of my clients got arrested again. Who is that guy?" And I looked at him, and all of a sudden it was an article about that murder, and that was the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever a medium gets that type of validation, it's like, here he is on the front page of the newspaper. That's the guy that I saw. And so that to me is substantially different than saying, "Oh, I wrote this book that 23 dead people told me." Well, if you've interviewed family members and were able to bring through that information that can be verified, that's one thing. And let me tell you, I was not expecting to do that day. I was there in my capacity as an attorney, not as a medium. Mm-hmm. So to answer your question, I think that most spirits are able to communicate right away, but I think some of them don't want to let go, or they're afraid, or they're so confused that they linger here for a while. So sorry about the lengthy explanation, but...
Oh, no.
let me just mention, too, that in the next... after we get some discussion going here, and after a few minutes, Mark has agreed to take some calls and do some mini readings if anybody wants one. We'll let you know when to start calling in, and I'll put the number in the chat room. But it is there on your screen, and you can also use the click talk button if you have a headset on your computer. So I just want to let everybody know that. But we're talking tonight, the theme is really about how to help spirits during investigations and help them to move on. And I think the story you just told was very, very interesting, obviously compelling, you know, about that. So, you know, what about investigators? You know, have you found anything? I don't know how much you've done it, but have you found anything that, well, you just gave one example of what you did. You called on every on everybody there is.
well, you know, it was because I wasn't expecting to walk into that. And what that technique is called is known as spirit rescue, where what we do is persuade a spirit to let go and go into the light. Because my understanding is that you have free will even on the other side. And so some people, when they pass, it's so traumatic, or they are so afraid or so disoriented, they just don't want to let go. And if you can persuade them to let go, they will. I've been in a number of instances where there have been situations, like not quite as dramatic as that one, but I was recently on a haunted tour at this place near where I live. And it's interesting because the docent called me up and asked me if I would be willing to work on a haunted tour thing that they're putting together, which I thought, you know, that'd be fun. But there's a couple different schools of thought as to what a ghost is. One theory is that matter can retain energy and a form of memory. So what I mean by that is if, let's say there's a house and there's a brutal murder in that house. And it's a very heavy vibration. And so people report seeing or feeling the murder over and over. It's kind of like, remember those old 8-track tapes, you know, that sort of played forever? It's like that. It's happening over and over and over. And so in that instance, the ghost is no more a spirit than a vapor trail is a jet. So it's a residual energy signature, if you will. So how do you get rid of that? It is my belief that you can interrupt that energy signature. I think that like by what we call bringing in the white light, bringing in the presence of the Holy Spirit. I mean, I'm Catholic, so you know I do a Christian based focus on my work. But, I mean, if, you know, you've got pious Hindu mediums or whatever, but you're bringing in the white light, and to interrupt that negative energy, it's like cutting the tape on an A-track. It can't play anymore. So that's one way of dealing with it. And I think that in some instances, there are spirits that don't want to let go, and we can communicate with them and say, you know, it's okay. You can go into the light. I was asked by a department store to come and check out this one area of the store. And I was talking to the manager, and I go, well, what's up? And he said, there's one part of the store that scares the employees. I go, great. You know, so I go there, and it's in the woodworking department. And the employees kept reporting shadows and cold chills, and they heard whispers and it scared them. So I'm walking around, and all of a sudden I feel a presence, and I see a young guy, you know, maybe around 30, and to me he looked like a construction worker, and I got the distinct impression that he was a carpenter. And it was interesting because he was loitering in the woodworking section of the store. And I communicated with him and said, you know, you have to let go. And his response was, why can't anybody see me?
Hmm.
And I think a lot of times some of them don't seem to realize that they've passed. And so I said, well, you got to let go. And go into the light. It's the family members, friends will be there, you'll be safe. And he just sort of faded away. It was interesting because a month later, the manager called me because I don't know what you did. He said, but no one's scared of anymore in that area. And you know, we're not seeing shadows. We're not hearing voices and all this. So, you know, I assume I did something, but, you know, it's really hard to say. It's really hard to say.
Well, you know what the question that begs to be asked, and I'm playing a little bit of devil's advocate here, is why don't relatives or kind-hearted spirits, benevolent spirits, come to somebody's rescue, even if they do have free will?
I don't exactly know, but what I think is that they may come and they may reach out. I guess the closest thing I can analogize it to is, you know how in the movie Ghost, if you saw the movie Ghost,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
there was a number of times when like the white light would open and Patrick Swayze's character was like, no, 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 and he kept going away
yep.
from it.
Yep.
I think it's something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that maybe they're like, no, I don't want to be dead. I don't want to let go. I have unfinished business, and they want to be attached to this place. Now, let me contradict myself. When recently studying with British mediums from Arthur Findlay College in Great Britain, they say that that's not true, that when you die, you become part of the collective consciousness of the other side. And that we are multidimensional beings. We are having a physical experience, which you know the three of us are having right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But there's a spiritual extension of ourselves, our so-called mm-hmm. higher self, which is having a very different experience than us. And so that once we are no longer tethered to the material world, that we cross over right away. And they think that ghosts are simply the vapor trail analogy, that a ghost is no more a living spirit than a vapor trail is no more a jet.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that because I think Joseph Campbell had one of the best kind of analogies. He basically said, somebody asked him something that kind of implied that to him one time, either ghosts or spirits like that, and he said, you know what, I think once you cross over, you're so in admiration of the Godhead, this is the last place you want to come back to.
Yeah, that's what I would like to believe. But, you know, there are so many...
But, you know, by the same token, though, Mark, maybe the spirits do come to that spirit, and they reject them, too. And, you know, the interesting thing about that when we talk about, you know, earthbound spirits is it's almost as if it meets the old lore of the church where those people are in limbo.
You know, that's an interesting theory. And, you know, people assume because I communicate with spirits that I have all the answers. And I'm striving to learn more. And what's interesting about what I do is that this is a lifetime journey. And I don't think anybody can have all the answers because, you know, I was raised to believe things in a certain way. As a Catholic, of course, my mom was a medium, so I've sort of had Catholic plus spiritualism. So we had a different take on things. And the more I work with this, I listen to what the British people are saying, and that makes perfect sense. And then I walk into a situation like the murder or like in that department store or in some of these quote-unquote haunted houses, and I begin to wonder. And so I think that maybe all of it is true and that some spirits might be more evolved than others. And I would think that the less evolved spirits are the ones that are more likely to hang on to the material world and not want to cross. Because what Joseph Campbell's talking about, and I have a tremendous amount of admiration for his work. In fact, I studied him in college because I was minoring in religion. And I think that people with an evolved sense of spirituality and that have deep faith in whatever religion are more likely to let go and go into the light, which is what you should do.
Hmm.
But some people might just not want to let go, and I think that it's unfair to that spirit, and that's where the quote-unquote spirit rescue comes in. But there's a lot of different opinions on this.
We had an investigation a while back at an abandoned, well, it wasn't really abandoned, it was an old firehouse. Remember that, Grant?
Yep.
And there was an individual who came through. We had a couple of mediums there. Individual who came through who was, well, I don't know if he was dilatory. He was somewhat retarded or somewhat like that, but he had worked there, you know, in the firehouse, perhaps a janitor, custodian, maintenance, something like that. And did he end up committing suicide? I think he
killed somebody or did something,
he
and he was
himself. I think he committed suicide by hanging him
bell tower or something like that.
Yeah, with the hose, with the water hose. And he was so, and this is the story we're getting from the mediums, he was so despondent. And he was absolutely sure he was going to hell, and he was hanging around there, and he would not cross over. He would not go into the light, regardless of what we did.
That reinforces the belief that spirits have free will and that it is fear which is keeping them from ascending. Now, see, I don't believe in hell, and certainly as a Catholic, I was raised to believe in hell and the pit of fire and the jerk with the pitchfork and all that. But I don't believe in eternal damnation. Now, I don't think that people that commit horrible acts get a free pass. I think that, and I believe that there are several levels to the other side. And it's funny because people are there 7 or are there 12? I think that we can't even really comprehend how it works. But I think it's all about.
Well, I've already got the answers. They come back as mosquitoes or cockroaches. You know? that's what happens to those folks.
You can tell how many rotten people
can't.
They are.
You know, that's why they're so prolific.
So, Mark, I want to throw this one at you too. I mean, it's that same investigation where this fellow, you know, was basically in his own private hell is really what it was.
Yes.
We picked up on, and not we, but the mediums were picking up on another entity, an inhuman entity, not malevolent, but just another entity. And this we'll call him the custodian for lack of a better term, but this fellow was definitely afraid and kept running and hiding from this other entity. And so we inquired more, and it turns out that the message was that this other entity had been sent him cross over and couldn't persuade him, couldn't.
You know, he was bound to him almost.
It was like it was like this, you know, I guess you could almost, religious people might call this entity an angel of sorts, but it was very interesting because we were asking questions and the information we got, and I understand that all of this is subjective, but this is the story we got, that this entity was assigned to him and he was going to be there until he could get this fellow to cross over. This entity was going to be there.
Well,
and,
go on.
Go ahead, and I'll...
Well, I do believe that we each have a number of spirits around us that work with us all the time. And we have a main spirit guide, which can, in my opinion, be either an angelic entity or a human spirit. And then we've got other spirits, which are spirit helpers. And they can change in energies come in. But there's one that's with us from womb to tomb. So under my belief system, gentleman who committed suicide, he was rejecting the advice and the wisdom and the counsel of his main spirit guide. And, you know, that's really sad because these energies that are, quote-unquote, assigned to us, I mean, they're here for good reason, and they're here for the highest of purposes. And we're supposed to, we're not supposed to because we have free will, but when they suggest things to us, we should do that. And it's interesting when you were, I guess I used the word interesting too much. It was fascinating that when you said earlier that, You know, it's funny when I play back these recordings of myself, it's like, oh, I got to stop saying this too much and that too much. Anyway, getting back to
Well, you know what's really interesting too, guys? National Geographic, I don't know if anybody saw it, maybe some of the folks in our audience saw it, ran a thing about, you know, the human migration, and they were tracing back genetically folks at all the roots all the way back to Africa. And the thing that I think a lot of people don't really understand, and I don't understand, I'm not a geneticist myself, but each and every one of us carries within our genetic structure remnants of our ancestors from hundreds of thousands of years ago. You have markers in your genetics for your male ancestors and your female ancestors that we carry. So we share in common with somebody that goes back thousands of years. And you know what? There's some kind of immortality in that. And so it always makes me kind of wonder, you know, maybe those genes are talking to us. Mm-hmm. You know? It just, like, that wonderful tapestry we talked about the last time you were on the show, Mark.
Yeah, you know, I mean, anything's possible. And, you know, what is amazing about the time that we live in is we are now developing the technology to begin to analyze these things. You know, what you're talking about is an outgrowth of the Human Genome Project, which is just incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like a lot of people say that, you know, what I do is hogwash and all that, and that's okay. They're just not ready to accept or to understand or to evolve spiritually. Little jab there. But when you look at the survival of consciousness studies that have been conducted at the University of Arizona, and I think Dr. Kenneth Ring was heavily involved with that, and he's written near-death experience, which just talking to near-death experience people is amazing. But similar studies have been conducted in Russia, Great Britain, France, Italy, Switzerland, India, and I think Japan, and they all come up with similar results. And it's interesting that the scientists who are conducting these have a tendency to be very, you know, secular, and they're subjecting all this to scientific method. And at the end of these studies, they come to the conclusion that our consciousness survives our physical death, and that is really wonderful validation. Because, I mean, I was having dinner with a friend recently, and he was like, well, what you do is impossible. I said, well, you're a Christian, aren't you? He goes, yes. So what do you think? You have a soul? Yes, but you can't talk to it. And I'm looking at him going like, okay, you being the big expert on this, what's your theory? He goes, well, you're just reading people's minds. I go, oh, so that's not impressive if I'm reading people's minds. I go, well, let me take you one further. How is it that I get stuff that wouldn't be in that person's mind? Because a lot of times when I do readings, and somebody will come through, and I'll describe things, and they go, I don't know who that is. And then I'll get a call 2 days later or an email or something, and they go, that was my mother's aunt. And, you know, they had this great relationship, and she wanted her to know all these things. Now, if I'm reading minds, how can I read something in somebody's mind that isn't there to read? You know, but it's interesting that this friend of mine, his convoluted theories about how I'm not really doing this were much more complicated and difficult to achieve than just the fact that all I do is tune into a frequency, which some call heaven, some call the other side. So I always get a big kick out of that. And I think that if people don't believe in spirit contact, that's fine. It's not within the realm of experience. I'm not here to force anybody to believe in it. It's like justifying a belief in God. Mm-hmm. And I've listened to atheists say, oh, so you pray mentally and these brain waves go to talk to a supernatural entity. That sounds like mental illness to me. To me, that sounds insane. and you know, how, you know, we're not here to, or I'm not here to persuade those people. But it can make for some fun conversation, as long as it'll
sure
get personal.
It seems like they live in a dull universe, you know? I mean, it seems to me that those kind of folks, and I'm not denigrating them in any way, shape, or form, but it just seems like those people have, you know, they just don't get it. There's so much more to what's going on around us, and I think that they're myopic, yeah?
Well, I think so too. And how sad to think that this is the supreme pinnacle of evolution in the universe, and that this is it. And it was when I was in New York at this media conference, and I wanted to talk to Psychology Today, and their representative said, "I don't want to talk to you." He goes, "I don't believe you can talk to the dead, and neither do my editors." And I'm thinking, "Oh, Psychology Today, here's the big open-minded publication." So I handed him my card, and I go, and he was young. He was only like 22, 23, so he's a kid. What does he know? And so I handed him my card, and I said, "You know, when someone you love dies, and you're psychobabble, Prozac, and faithlessness fail you, and you say,
good for you,
dear nothing, please help me, I said, feel free to give me a call."
Yeah.
And boy, you should have seen the look on this kid's face. Look, I threw a bucket of cold water in there. It's like, yeah, feel free to pray to nothing and see how that works for you.
Yeah. Well, Stevie Wonder said it best. It's the only free psychiatrist known to man.
Wow.
What?
All right, Stevie.
Yeah, that's sad.
I didn't follow it.
One of his songs is like when you're troubled, go talk to God. But that was part of the thing. Was like I think it's part of even the lyrics of the song. The only free psychiatrist known to man.
Hey, I'm free sometimes, but of course I'm not a psychiatrist. But I do play one on TV.
Me too.
But see, what's good about you, Doug, is, and I know you're being funny now, but the truth about you is, you're a very good sympathetic ear, and you have a lot of compassion. And that's the trait that a lot of people need, is someone to listen. And with the work I do as a medium, obviously I'm dealing with a lot of people who are missing loved ones and are grieving. And for those of for the listeners out there that aren't mediums or psychics, being a sympathetic ear is sometimes what a grieving person needs. They need someone they can open up to that is understanding and compassionate. And I mean, I've heard just horrible things people have said. I mean, the parents who've lost a child, "Oh, don't worry, you can have another baby." All right, you don't say things like that. Or,
well, you know,
gee,
what?
Your mom.
You're more right, Mark, because the bottom line is, and I think that I think it's really good that you tell people this, because they don't understand. If you're comforting somebody in that situation, it's okay to say absolutely nothing.
Exactly.
Your presence alone is enough to help.
Grant, you hit the ball out of the park on that one. You did, because sometimes that's all they need, is just somebody there. Or to say, "Oh, well, your mother was 78. That's old. She had a good life." You don't say things like that to people. Or if somebody loses a spouse, "Well, you're still young. You'll find somebody else."
They wouldn't want you to feel that way. A fellow counselor told me one time, a woman's husband had been tragically killed in an accident, and within 24 hours after that, the guy who fancied himself a counselor called her up and told her, "Your husband wouldn't want you to feel that way." How in the heck would he know what her husband felt? He was probably doing more harm than good by what he said to her.
Yeah,
that
or
help at all.
Or you'll get over it. And
yeah.
The cliche thing that everybody says to grieving people is, "If there's anything I can do, please let me know."
Mm-hmm.
And that really is a very kind thing to say. And it really is also when you don't know what else to say.
Yeah.
Probably the best thing to say is, I can't even imagine what you're going through, but my heart goes out to you and I'm here for you."
Yeah.
And then just let them talk, because some people want to talk, and then other people can't handle being around anyone else. Grief is a terrible thing. Grief, it's like an evil Burmese python. It just sort of engulfs us and wraps us up and suffocates, and it can crush the life out of you. But what people need to understand about grief is, you can't do anything about the fact that somebody you love died. You can't. And people say, "If only I had done this, if only I had done that," because you're not God, all right? But what you can do is change how you react to it. Now, you need to go through the grieving process, but you also need to realize that grief can take on a life of its own, and it can become your life. And I'm asked to go to several grief counseling groups, and I went to this one that specializes in parents who've lost children. And that's always very, very difficult.
Oh, that's got to be extremely difficult.
It is. But this particular group, all they did was go around in a circle and graphically relive the death of their child. And there were people there that had been coming to this group every week for 5 years.
Oh, my gosh. Someone should have kicked that group leader in the hiney or something for
keeping
them stuck like that. That's awful.
And there was no healing going on whatsoever. These people wanted to embrace their pain. They wanted to live with their pain. They all agreed they hated Halloween because it's about children. They all agreed how they hated Christmas because it's only about children, and how they hated this and they hated that. And then they allotted me 2 minutes to speak. And as you can tell, I'm a fairly long-winded person. So I stand up, and one guy gets up and goes, "I don't want him here," and runs out of the room. He was terrified that I was going to do some satanic rite and throw a black cat at him or whatever. But the best thing that did come out of it is a number of people from that group did come to me at a later date. Yeah, it was. And I understand that they didn't feel the need to return to that group afterwards. Now, I'm not saying that I cured them or I did anything, but I helped them break that cycle of what I call the pity party designed to sustain the pain. Oh, yeah, all these self-help groups. I mean, some of my
I won't go that far with Al-Anon, but that's still an argument between Mr. Doug Kelly and I, but, you know, the bottom line is just that, you know, it's got to, you know, a group like that keeps people stuck, and grieving, and I know you guys will both agree with me, is a process. People have to go through that. Everybody is individual, and you know, it can be anywhere from a year to 2 years to 3 years. It depends on the individual. And I think, you know, the thing of it is that all of us go through life, we create this little reality around us of the way we think things should be. And then when life throws us a curve and we lose somebody that's dear to us and, you know, our little reality is completely shaken, many people have a very difficult time coming out of their reality bubble. And it's like way, way too much for folks.
We're down to about the last 15 minutes. So what I want to do is I want to put this out there. We've probably got time for one or two mini readings if anybody wants one. And if you do, then the numbers are on your screen to call in, or you can use your click to talk button. I'm going to put the number in chat as well. And when you do call in, we just ask you to keep it as brief as possible. And while we're waiting, if anybody calls in, I wanted to add another aspect of that case, Mark, on the custodian suicide and the entity that was there to try to help him cross over. You know, I was directing questions to this entity and asking questions like, you know, how long have you been doing this course? That didn't matter. Time was irrelevant. But the big thing that was very, very curious to me was, you know, I asked questions like, well, what do you normally do? Is this all you do? And the answer was yes. Well, what about you? What are your aspirations? What is it that you would like to do? And it was like I was talking to a brick wall. It was like their whole, according to the information we got back through the mediums, was their whole purpose was to do nothing but this, and when they were done with this one, they would be given a new assignment.
Right. And that's part of how, in my belief system, how a spirit ascends into higher frequencies on the other side by being a spirit helper or a facilitator. And certainly time has no meaning there, and this entity has the patience of the Almighty. So what would for us maybe be 40, 50 years to this entity is but a few brief moments. And since they are in the light and that they are in the harmony that is God, they're not feeling the anxiety and the impatience that we would here in the material world, because everything we know has a beginning, a middle, and an end, and limits. And with them, time doesn't exist, and I don't think it exists at all, or certainly doesn't
it's
exist
not
the
linear,
way that we look at it.
Well,
no,
it's certainly a human concept. It's something we've cooked up.
Well, it makes sense to us. We're born, we get old, we die, and we can't do anything about what happened yesterday because it's gone. So we think that time is a linear thing. And a lot of us think that psychics who get into precognition, that is foretelling the future, what they're actually doing is able to raise their brainwave frequency to tap into the timelessness of time, which has been theorized by Albert Einstein, Stephen Hawking, Richard Feynman, that everything that has happened, is happening, and will happen is going on simultaneously. Now, if we try to think about that, it's like, whoa, that'll drive you nuts. And you need somebody like an Einstein or a Stephen Hawking to really grasp that concept. Because that means like the Roman Empire is going on right now along with the future whatever going on right now. And that's really hard to grasp.
According to quantum physics, it could be in a different parallel dimension.
Yes, but see, that's why or how a psychic can foretell future events, because we're tapping into that sort of thing. Yeah. And see, I am a medium, but every medium is also a psychic. Not every psychic is a medium. And my forte is spirit communication, but it's interesting because the longer I do this work, I start getting into the precognition. So I think that the abilities start to overlap, but you have a specialty in one or two areas. I mean, there's some people going around, oh, I am a specialist in everything. In my opinion, outside of Jesus, there wasn't anybody that could be a specialist in healing, in precognition, in perception of spirits, and so on and so forth.
All right,
so
we got a caller, so let's take your call. Welcome, caller. What's your first name?
Mary.
Hey, Mary. How are you? Can you speak up, please? We got a
I'll turn my mic up.
Okay, that'd be great.
Hey, Mary, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Speak up real loud, too, if you would.
Okay.
That's a little better. So what's your question for Mark?
I'm just wondering if he can pick up on any of my dead relatives.
Dead relatives.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm having a real hard time hearing Mary.
She wants to know if you can pick up on any of her dead relatives. Is that correct, Mary?
Yeah.
Okay, that's
okay. All right, bear with me for a second. Okay. I'm going to
chat here, Mark, and you just interrupt me whenever you're ready, okay?
All right.
Mark's going to put on his tin hat and zoom in.
Okay, I'm getting something. Mary, what I'm feeling is a female energy on the maternal side of your family. And I would describe this woman as a very sweet person. And she keeps showing me like pink lipstick. So that keeps getting replayed over and over. I'm also getting a woman, the same woman who had dark hair, and it feels like maybe she wore it in a ponytail, but it was fairly long. Also, she was not a heavy person. She was on the thinner side. And when I say on the maternal side of your family, she had a mother type of relationship to you. Could be a mother, could be an aunt. Does this make sense to you?
No.
Not at all.
Mm-mm.
Okay. Well.
Okay. All right.
Not long.
Thanks,
hair.
Yeah.
I've got short hair. Maybe, but
no,
not long hair.
No, he's talking about not you, right? He's talking about.
No, I'm talking about the woman on the other side.
Okay.
Does that make sense now?
No.
All right. Well.
I'm trying to think.
Maybe it'll come to you.
Yeah.
Give us some thought, but thanks for calling in, Mary. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, bye.
Bye.
Okay, so let's, while we've got about 10 minutes or less remaining, And one of the things that I want to, one of the things I want to do, two things. I want to sum up kind of the theme of what we were talking about. How do you help spirits during an investigation? So in a nutshell, Mark, what would you recommend? You know, investigators, researchers are at a genuine, legitimate haunting or paranormal activity involving ghost spirits. And I know people differentiate the word. I'm not. I'm using them synonymously. But a ghost who is not crossed over, who is earthbound, any recommendations in a nutshell?
Yes. What you do is if you feel their presence, I would say a prayer. It doesn't matter what type of prayer you say, as long as you're invoking God. And you say to them, say, listen to me. You need to let go. You should not be afraid. You need to go into the light. And what you do is you focus on having the white light coming through you. I picture it as standing under a spotlight and then envision the spotlight encircling that room or that area and that entire house or block or whatever it is, and ask God to send angels or family members for this person to escort them into the light for their own good. And that's a very basic way of doing it, and tell them to let go of their fear, because once they go into the light, they'll be happy, they'll be protected, and they'll be safe. And I have found that particular technique appears to work.
And let me just add that if you are a that is not religious, remember a couple of things. Number one, it doesn't matter what you believe. It matters what the family believes. And secondly, if the family is not religious, then you can always call on past loved ones, like Mark had mentioned, to come in and help. So those are things that have worked for us in the past. We've also reasoned with the entity, the spirit, and you know it's that's worked at times too. So, and if you've got a medium there that can help with unfinished business, then that's just a feather in your cap. So that's one thing I wanted to sum up. The other thing that I really wanted to point out here that came to me in a conversation I had with Mark a couple of weeks ago, not on the air. But remember, Mark, we were talking about things, and I told you I'm not really psychic. And you made a comment. You said, you know, Doug, it's something to this effect. You said something like, you know, Doug, I think you're more than you know. Something to that effect. I don't remember your exact words. But I've been pondering that for the last couple of weeks. I've never really considered myself psychic or psychically sensitive. However, there are times when I seem to know things, and I'm rarely wrong about them, and it's validated for me. I don't know drastic things. I don't have precognition. I can't tell you whether the world's going to end in 2012. Well, yes, I can. It's not. But, you know, I can't foretell events and things like that. But the point of this whole thing I'm trying to say here is that when you're dealing with a psychic or a medium, they may not, you know, they're never 100%. There's no psychic or medium who's always 100%. However, there's more to it than just connecting with spirits on either side or foretelling of events or whatever, because you get a good psychic or good medium, they can help you to grow. Now this, and Mark's not the only one that I've discovered this with. I mean, Gregory, you know, he's on Paranexus Research Foundation team. You know, he's done that too. And I just want to point that out. So when you're, if you ever do consult a psychic, what are they, you know, sometimes they'll say something that will get you thinking in a direction you had never gone before, which can lead to growth.
And that's a really great point, Doug. Because it isn't about me. It isn't about the medium or the psychic. It is about the person receiving the message. And one of the things that we learn as mediums is my ego, my personality, me, I'm irrelevant. All I am is an instrument to bring through this information. And it is about the person receiving the reading. And because that's what we're all here about. And it's about the spirit that wants or the information that, that is coming through. Because it's very easy for, especially the famous mediums and psychics to get, you know, they become celebrities, and when you're a celebrity, it's very easy for that to go to your head. But even them, when you hear somebody like John Edward or James von Prague talk, they're saying, no, it's not about me, it's about the work. And that's really a positive thing, and that's what it is. And we're not 100%. And people go, aha, if you were for real, you'd be 100%. It's like, look, what do you know in life that is 100% reliable? Let's start with your computer, okay?
Well, you know, the bottom line is, though, the bottom line is, though, Mark, is if you are instrumental in helping somebody with the healing process, then, you know, it doesn't matter how you get to that end, as long as you're not doing anybody any harm. If you are acting in good conscience and you're trying to help that person, and that person believes in you, and vice versa, you're actually being very therapeutic with that person.
Well, that's one of the benefits of a mediumistic reading, is it is a therapeutic step in one's journey through grief. It's not going to cure you, and it's not going to make it all better, and your pain isn't going to go away, but in some small measure, it's going to help, if there's a good connection. And it's a shame I didn't have more time to work with the caller, okay? I guess she thought I was talking about her, but, you know, the energy that was coming through was a maternal energy. And, you know, sometimes I'm right on, and sometimes it takes more time. The mini readings are a lot of fun, and they're very challenging, but it's tough because, you know, we've got to also, all right, now do this, boom, perform, now do this, boom. And I'm not criticizing, it's because I do this a lot on the radio. But in a one-on-one reading where we have more time and we're not pressured, because a lot of it is creating energy for the spirit to step into. And it's essential for me as the medium to get my ego and my personality out of the way, and so that I'm perceiving and conveying. Because it's very easy if somebody comes through and you have a very active mind and you want to start filling in the blanks, and that's where you can give in inaccurate information.
The reason you're back is because, you know, you're good. I mean, the first show, the last show that you were on, which is the first show you were on, I mean, there was some stuff, and, you know, Grant, in typical fashion, you know, he lives in Missouri, right, the Show Me State, and you know, we all look at this, and, you know, with a objective eye, Grant does too, so do I, but you know what, after that show was over, you and Grant had talked, I was listening, and you made a believer out of Grant, and
that was an interesting conversation we had. There was no way that you would have known a lot of that information, and I thought it was really fascinating, you know, and I was quite impressed.
Well, I appreciate that, and you know, it's funny because I was talking to a friend of mine today that's a medium, and a lot of times, you know, we're just conveying what's coming through, and I'll say something, and the person goes, oh, my God, that's it. And I'm like, really? You know, because a lot of times it's as much of a surprise to me as it is to the person receiving the information. And sometimes the messages seem really odd.
Yeah, it must be very cryptic to you at times, but makes a lot of sense to the person you're doing the reading for.
Well, I mean, and not being crude, but there was one where the spirit, it was like this crotchety old man, but, you know, it was the father or whatever, and his message was, tell her to get the stick out of her, you know, and I go, oh, God, I can't say that, and I convey that, and the woman starts burst out laughing. She goes, oh, my God, he always used to say that.
Okay, we're down to less than a minute, and I wish we had more time, but, you know, Mark, if you're game, we'll have you back on in the next month or two, and we always enjoy having you.
It's a real pleasure.
I love working with you guys. I think you're awesome, and I love what Paranexus Universe stands for. Everybody check out their website. become a member, because you're going to learn something that's going to help you grow.
And your website, real quick.
HealGriefWithBelief.com. That's all one word, HealGriefWithBelief.com. That's my website. Tell you about me and how to get in touch with me.
Sounds good. And we appreciate everybody's time tonight listening to the show. And just a real quick mention, go check out Paranexus.org. We just launched a cool new photo contest, and I know you'll love it. Good night, everybody.
Have a great holiday weekend, and be safe, everybody.